Yesterday, we finished the first and the second question and answer. So, the burden, the carrier of the burden, taking up of the burden, and laying down of the burden. So, the burden is the five aggregates of clinging. That is the five aggregates that are the objects of clinging. And the carrier of the burden, or the burden bearer, is the person. And here the word person is used in its conventional sense. And so we are not to take that by the use of the word person here, Buddha accepted the notion that the person really exists in the ultimate sense. So according to the teachings of the Buddha, there is no individual, no person, no man, no woman, no being whatsoever, but just the five aggregates, or mind and matter. And in the second question and answer, the five aggregates are said to be burden, and the person is the carrier. Actually, the burden and the burden carrier are the same. Although they are the same, in the second answer, they are described as though they were different. The third question, what is the taking up of the burden? And the answer is craving. So craving is the taking up of the burden. So whenever we have craving, or we have attachment for something, that means we are taking up, or we are picking up the burden. Is described as producing rebirth. So the craving produces rebirth. Craving is lobha, attachment, craving, desire, and so on. And this craving has the ability to produce rebirth, or to produce existence in the future. Understand the meaning of this producing rebirth, we must understand at least the three stages in the teaching of dependent origination. Stages are craving, clinging, and bhava, say becoming. First, there is craving, and this craving develops. This craving develops into clinging. So when it becomes powerful, and when there is clinging, there is action. So a person clings to something, and in order to get that thing, he does something. So the clinging leads to action. And that action is one part of becoming. So the word bhava, or becoming, is made to have two meanings. Existence is one meaning, or becoming is one meaning, and the other is the source from which something springs up. So when a person does something, that means he accumulates karma. So kusala, wholesome karma or unwholesome karma. And as the result of karma, there is the rebirth in the future. So actually it goes through these steps. First there is craving, and the craving develops into clinging, and clinging give rise to action, wholesome or unwholesome, and that wholesome or unwholesome action or karma produces rebirth. So long as beings are not able to eradicate craving, they will be reborn again and again in the round of rebirth. Rebirth means any rebirth, not rebirth in lower realms, not rebirth in woeful states only. So any rebirth should be taken as rebirth here. Because of craving, beings are born in four woeful states. Because of craving, beings are born as human beings, as devas or lower celestial beings, and as brahmas or higher celestial beings. Now, when we beings are born as human beings, and the celestial beings, it is not the result of unwholesome karma. It is as a result of wholesome karma that people are reborn as human beings and celestial beings. But their wholesome karma is conditioned by craving. So long as craving is not eradicated, beings will be doing wholesome karma or unwholesome karma. And so when we say the craving produces rebirth, we mean any kind of rebirth and not just rebirth in the four woeful states. I raise this point because I found a mistranslation in this book. So here it is translated as craving that leads downwards to rebirth. I think the translator thought that craving conditions only the rebirth in woeful states and not in the upper realms. But as I said, craving is the basis, and when there is craving, there is clinging, and when there is clinging, there is the action, wholesome or unwholesome, and so it leads to rebirth in any realm. So when we say craving produces rebirth, we mean rebirth and any rebirth, not only rebirth in the lower states. So there is no word for downwards in the original Pali. So the original Pali word is porno bhavika. So porno means again, and bhava means becoming, and ika means leading to or causing. So leading to again becoming or something like that. There is no word for downwards in the Pali, original Pali word. So sometimes translators put something in that are not in the original, thinking that they are making the meaning clearer or giving a fuller information. But in their attempt to do so, I think they did some harm. Because people may think that after reading this translation, people may think that the craving causes rebirth only in the four woeful states of lower realms. This translation, that craving that leads downwards to rebirth, where will be reborn? We still have craving. So according to this translation, we will be reborn all in the downward realms, and we will not be reborn as human beings, or we will not be able to go up to celestial worlds. And this craving is also described as accompanied by delight and greed. Now, when we have a craving, say we like this or we like that, we like this object, we like that object, or we like this person, we like that person, and so that is craving. And when we like, or when there is liking, when there is attachment, our minds are said to be contaminated, said to be soiled, said to be stained. So the Pali word used for the attachment, one Pali word used for attachment is raga. And the primary meaning of raga is a dye, the color. And this dye, whenever it comes into contact with the cloth, it stains the cloth. So raga or lobha is something that stains our minds, that contaminates our minds. And here it is said that craving is always accompanied by, or craving is actually delight and this raga or stain. And it is also described as delighting in this or that existence or this or that object. That means wherever a being is reborn, that being is attached to that life. So when we are reborn as human beings, we are attached to human life. And animals are also attached to their animal life. And so every being is attached to its life. And it is said that the first active consciousness that arises in a being is accompanied by attachment to that life. So we all began our lives with attachment. And that is why attachment is so difficult to get rid of. It will persist until the stage of arahantship. Only when one becomes an arahant can one eradicate attachment or lobha altogether. Even when one has become a non-returner, there is still attachment, there is still lobha in his mind. So lobha is a very persistent, and it stays in the mind until one becomes an arahant. So craving delights in this life, that life, and craving delights in this object, that object. So sometimes we come across a desirable or a beautiful object, and we like it and we are attached to it. So we have craving for it. So in this way, craving takes delight in almost every object, say, that is desirable. So this craving is said to be like taking up the burden. So every time we have craving, we are taking up the burden of the five aggregates. That means we are virtually taking up the five aggregates. What we really take up is the craving. But along with craving, we take up its consequences, its clinging, and then wholesome or unwholesome karma action, and then the resultant aggregates. So whenever we have craving for any person or any object, so we are picking up these five aggregates, which are the very heavy burden. With the burden of five aggregates, and during life as we go along, we pick up many burdens again and again, so that at the end of the life, it may be tenfold or hundredfold burden aggregates we are bearing. And there are three kinds of craving. These three kinds of craving are taught in the first sermon of the Buddha and in many sutta as well. So these three kinds of craving are the first, kama tanha, and the second, bhava tanha, and the third, vibhava tanha. So the first one, kama tanha, is craving for five kinds of desirable sense objects. Now here, kama means desirable sense objects. Sense objects means the objects we experience through the five senses. So they are sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and touches. And they are they must be desirable. So we have a craving for only for the desirable objects. For undesirable objects, we don't have craving. We may have aversion. So kama here means the objects of the senses, objects of the five senses, and desirable object as that. So craving for or attachment to these five desirable sense objects is called kama tanha. We have a lot of this kama tanha because we live in the world of kama. We live in the world of sense objects, desirable sense objects. So we see something and we like it, there is kama tanha. We hear something and we like it, there is kama tanha. So there are many instances of kama tanha. We are always having this kama tanha. not difficult to understand. Now we come to bhava tanha. Bhava tanha is translated as craving for becoming. Now here, according to the ancient commentaries, we must understand first the word bhava. Now there are two words, bhava and tanha. So do you know the word tanha? Tanha means craving or thirst. Now what does bhava means here? Now the literal meaning of the word bhava is becoming. And we know that bhava means an existence or a life. But there is another meaning of bhava, and that is the source. Something out of which some other thing arises. So that is also called bhava. So we must understand that there are two kinds of bhava. Bhava as rebirth or becoming, and bhava as the source or the cause of becoming. Extension, the word bhava means eternity, because becoming and then remaining in that condition and not coming to old age or death. So bhava means eternity. So bhava tanha is explained as tanha or craving associated with the view that things are eternal, things are permanent. Actually, the Atman is permanent. Now there are two views. I think you're familiar with these two views, the eternity view and annihilation view. So there are people who think that there is an inner core, a Atman, that lives forever. Our bodies are impermanent, but that something that resides in our body is permanent. And when this body becomes old and then dies, then it enters another body. Like a bird moving from one tree to another. So those people believe that there is something that is permanent in the beings. And the craving associated with that kind of view, according to Buddhist teachings, it is a wrong view. So associated with that wrong view is called bhavatanha. So it is not just a craving for becoming. Craving associated with the view that there is something that is eternal. And who has that view that there is an eternal atta residing in our body and it moves from one body to another and so on? So a person who has that view also has craving. He will also be attached to this thing and that thing. He will be attached to people he likes. He will be attached to the things he likes. And so the craving arises in him at the same time when he has that view. And so that craving is what is called bhavatanha, craving associated with the eternal view, eternity view. Now bhavatanha is also explained as craving for rupa and arupa realms. Now there are what are called Brahma realms. They are above the devas. So craving for rupa and arupa realms, craving or desire to be reborn there, is also called a bhavatanha. Rupa Brahma and Arupa Brahma. So Rupa Brahma means Brahmas who have both mind and matter. Although they are called Rupa Brahmas, they have both mind and matter. And Arupa Brahma means the Brahmas who have no Rupa. So who have no matter, who have just mind. So mind-matter Brahmas and mind-only Brahmas. But there is one kind of Brahma that has matter only. So actually there are three kinds of Brahmas: matter-only Brahma, matter-mind Brahma, and mind-only Brahmas. So desire to be reborn in those Brahma realms, or attachment to those Brahma realms, is called bhavatanha. Then do to be reborn in the Brahma realms, he must try to get jhanas. He must practice samatha meditation and get rupa jhanas and arupa jhanas. Only when a person gets rupa jhana and arupa jhana can he be reborn in the realms of Brahmas. And attachment to these jhanas is also called bhavatanha. Now, a person gets jhanas, and he is attached to that to these jhanas. So the attachment to these jhanas is also called bhavatanha. There are three kinds of bhavatanhas: attachment or craving associated with eternity view, attachment or craving for rupa and arupa realms, and also attachment to or craving for the rupa and arupa jhanas. So three kinds of bhavatanhas. If it is too complicated to note the three, just go with the attachment associated with the eternity view. The third one, vibhavatanha. So here, vibhavatanha is described as attachment associated with annihilation view. Now, sometimes when you find the translation of this word, you may be frightened, because some people translate it as craving for self-annihilation. It's frightening, yeah? You want to kill yourself. So here we have the word vibhava. Vibhava is the opposite of bhava. So if bhava is becoming, vibhava is not becoming. And tanha is craving, and so craving for not becoming is vibhava tanha. There are people who do not believe in rebirth. So they believe that a being ends with death. So after death, nothing arises again. So that kind of belief that a person is annihilated at death is called annihilation view, or in Pali, Uccedavada. So there are many people nowadays who have this view. So they don't believe in rebirth or next lives. Now, with that view, they may also be attached to things in this life. They may also be attached to people in this life. And so when the craving arises in this way, then that craving is called vibhava tanha. So tanha, or craving, that arises along with, or that is associated with, annihilation view. The view that beings are annihilated at death and there is no more of them in the future. People who have this view don't want there to be a life in the future. Actually, they don't care for wholesome karma or unwholesome karma. They don't want to know wholesome karma or unwholesome karma. And many people who have this view are those who want to do what they like. They may kill, or they may steal, or whatever they want to do, and they may not want to do meritorious deeds. They may not want to practice charity and so on, because for them, this life is the only life. And so when you are in this life, enjoy this life as much as you can, even at the expense of others. So this is their basic philosophy. And although they do not want there to be a next life, they believe in this life. They believe, maybe even they believe in Atman, existing for this one life, and then administering the activities of the body. So such people do not want to there to be a future life. And the desire for not, how to call, there being a future life is what is called vibhavatana. So vibhavatana is not craving for death, craving for not becoming again. So that is a subtle difference. Because if we think that those who have this annihilation view crave for death, then they will all commit suicide. The fact that they are still alive shows that they do not want to die. They want to live long. But what they want is there to be no future life, so that they do not have to suffer the painful consequences of their wrongdoings in this life. So those who hold this view of annihilation are those who do not hate life, actually who want to enjoy life, but who do not want there to be a next life. And the craving associated with that wrong view is vibhavatana. You may even find this word translated as craving for prosperity. The word vibhava, I told you that it is the opposite of bhava. So bhava is becoming and vibhava is not becoming. But in another sense, we may mean expanded or something. So vibhava means prosperity or wealth. And it is used in this sense in the discourses also. So some people translate this vibhavatana as craving for prosperity. But that is quite wrong. Because craving for prosperity may go under kamatana. Because you crave for prosperity means you crave for five desirable objects. So it may not be different from kamatana. And the word vibhava here does not mean prosperity or wealth, but it means not becoming or annihilation. So every time we have one of these cravings, then we are picking up the burden of five aggregates. Now the fourth one, laying down of the burden. So you have been carrying this burden for a long time, and suppose there comes a time when you are able to put it down. So that is laying down of the burden. You'll feel very relieved when you have put the burden down. So the laying down of the burden is described here as total cessation of craving. Because when there's no craving, there is no taking up of the burden. So it is like laying down or throwing down the burden. And this cessation is described as that which is the remainderless cessation of that craving by magga. So this translation is according to the commentaries. Remainderless cessation, it looks a little awkward. Remainderless cessation. This is the literal translation of the Pali word. The Pali word is asesa, so remainderless. So in modern terms, we may say total. So I put the word total cessation. So remainderless cessation of that craving by magga. Now, when a person attains magga, that means when a person attains enlightenment, then craving is destroyed totally. Totally means so that it does not arise again. So that is what is called remainderless cessation. Here, cessation means not arising again. The Pali word for this English translation, there is the word viraga. Now, you know that vibhava is the opposite of bhava. So, viraga is the opposite of raga. Viraga is explained as magga, because magga eradicates not only raga, actually raga along with other mental defilements. So magga is called viraga. We can understand this word in its literal meaning. Raga is the stain. So vi is not, and so viraga means no stain. That means removal of stain. So raga is stain, and viraga, removal of stain. So by the removal of stain, all mental defilements, including craving, cease. So it is cessation like that by way of magga that is meant here. Words mean the same thing, giving it up, so giving up craving or getting rid of craving, relinquishing it, again, letting go of it, all mean the same thing. And the last one is getting free from it, also mean the same thing, and not relying on it, that means have no attachment to it, no attachment of it. So all of these words mean the total cessation of mental defilements, not just actually craving. Because when a person eradicates craving, then all other mental defilements are also eradicated. They arise together and they function together. And so when craving is eradicated, let's say almost all mental defilements are eradicated. That when craving is eradicated, I think all mental defilements are eradicated. craving passes until the non-returner's stage. So even non-returners still have craving, although that their craving may be very, very thin, very small, but they still have craving. So only when one becomes an arahant can one get rid of craving altogether. So when craving is gotten rid of altogether, then all other mental defilements are also gotten rid of. So along with craving, all mental defilements are eradicated by way of the magga or path consciousness. So when path consciousness arises, the fourth path consciousness arises, then all mental defilements are eradicated. So there is no remainder of these mental defilements. So it is called remainderless cessation of craving. Craving or eradication of craving is like laying down the burden of five aggregates. Because when there is no craving, there will be no clinging, which is the stronger form of craving. When there is no clinging, there will be no acting. I mean, an action like as wholesome and unwholesome karma. And when there is no wholesome and unwholesome karma, there will be no resultant aggregate as rebirth in the future. So every time the craving is eradicated, the future aggregates are virtually eradicated. That is why extinction of craving or eradication of craving is described as laying down the burden. But by vipassana also, we are laying down the burden moment by moment. Vipassana does not eradicate mental defilements. That means it does not destroy mental defilements altogether. But it prevents mental defilements from arising. And that is what we call abandonment, the momentary abandonment. So momentary abandonment of mental defilement can be achieved through the practice of vipassana meditation. So when you practice vipassana meditation, you concentrate on the object, or you make notes of the object, and you see the objects clearly, you see the mind and matter separately and clearly, and you see that they are interrelated and so on. So, and also you see that they arise and disappear, and so they are impermanent and so on. So when you see that the objects are impermanent and so on, there can be no craving for that object. So at every moment of vipassana, I mean the good moments of vipassana, you are getting rid of craving or getting rid of mental defilements. That means you are not letting these mental defilements arise with regard to that object. So with regard to that object, you are destroying the future mental future aggregates, because with regard to this object which is observed, you don't have craving. Then with regard to that object, you don't have clinging, so you don't have wholesome or unwholesome actions, and so there will be no resultant aggregates. So at every moment of vipassana, at every moment of noting, see, you are laying down or putting down or throwing down the burden of five aggregates. And yogis reach the stage of magga, or total cessation of craving and other mental defilements, only through the practice of vipassana. So without the practice of vipassana, without the practice of vipassana preceding it, no magga consciousness can arise, or no enlightenment can arise. So if we want to lay down the burden, we have to practice the preliminary eightfold path, or we have to practice vipassana. So when with this vipassana, which can destroy mental defilements just for a moment, matures, then it develops into the magga consciousness, or magga consciousness arises as the outcome of the vipassana practice. So in order to lay down the burden of aggregate, what we must do is practice vipassana or practice mindfulness. Only with this practice can we reach the stage where we can eradicate mental defilements, including craving. Now, at the end, there are two verses that restate what has been taught in the discourse. You know, this discourse is a very, very short one. We can print it on one page only. So there are two verses at the end, and they just restate what has been taught in the discourse. So the first verse says, "The burden indeed is the five aggregates, the burden carrier, the person. The taking up of the burden is sorrowful." Here he said sorrowful. Actually, the taking up of the burden is dana, right? So in this verse, Buddha said, the taking up of the burden is sorrowful. The laying down of the burden is bliss. So when you have to take up the burden, you don't want it, and you suffer, and so it is sorrowful. When you have to put it down or throw it down, and you feel relieved and happy, and so it is bliss. Now the second verse describes the eradication of, or the laying down of, the burden of an arahant. So it says, laying down the heavy burden, taking up not another one. Having pulled out the craving root and all, he is tranquil with thirst all quenched. Heavy burden. Now, when does an arahant lay down the heavy burden of aggregates? When he dies. Taking up not another one. Now, that is his specialty. We also lay down heavy burden at death, right? We will. We will also lay down the heavy burden. But as soon as we lay down the heavy burden, we'll pick up another, a fresh burden. But arahants are not like that. They will take up not another one. They will not take up any other burden. So that is the difference. Out the craving root and all. Now, ignorance is said to be the root of craving. So when we destroy craving, we must destroy also its root. If we cannot destroy the root, but just craving, then it will grow again and again. Arahants are those who have destroyed the craving along with the root, which is ignorance. So both ignorance and craving are, when both ignorance and craving are eradicated, there would be no more sprouting of the existence. Wow. Try the craving along with the root, which is ignorance, he become tranquil with tanha eradicated. Be destroyed along with the root. If the root is not destroyed, craving will grow again. Like plants, right? There are some plants that grow from bulbs. So when it is season, they grow up and then they put forth flowers and so on. And then at the end of the season, they disappear, as though they disappeared altogether. But since the bulb is in the earth, The next time when the season comes, they just grow up. That is because the bulb is not destroyed. So in the same way, when avijja or ignorance is not destroyed, but just the craving, then this craving will arise again when there are conditions for it. Do you want to hear a story? The time is up. A short story, okay. Which is not destroyed along with the root, can come up. Now, in Sri Lanka, in the olden days, there was an arahant whose name was Dhammadinna. He seemed to be very, very clever arahant, because he was able to help even his teachers, say, to become arahants. So he had, I think you can follow. He had a teacher. That teacher was a very famous, and the teacher himself taught to many students. And the teacher thought that he was an arahant, but he was actually not. So Dhammadinna one day investigated about the condition of his teacher, because he was an arahant, and so he could mentally investigate. And so he came to know that his teacher was still a puttujana, a worldling. So he said to himself, if I do not go to him, and he will die as a worldling, and he will not be free from the rebirths in the future, so I will go to him. And he went to his teacher. So he went through the air, and during daytime he reached there and he paid respects to his teacher. And then the teacher asked, why do you come here? Then he said, I want to ask you a question. Then the teacher said, you may ask me a question. If I know, I will answer. And so it is said in the book that he asked about 1,000 questions. And the teacher gave answers without hesitation. So at the end, he praised his teacher. So your wisdom is very keen. And then he asked, when did you attain this state? Meaning, when did you become an arahant? Then the teacher said, 60 years ago. Because for 60 years, he did not find a mental defilement arise in his mind. So his mind was so pure. The teacher had samapatti, the jhanas and samapatti. So by jhanas and samapatti, these mental defilements were put away. But he thought they were put away for good, because they never arose in his mind. So here he just said, it was 60 years ago that I became an arahant, or something like that. Then the pupil, Dhammadinna, asked, Bhante, do you make use of samadhi? That means, do you make use of samapattis? Then the teacher said, oh, it's not difficult. Then please make or create a pond. So by his mental power, then he created a pond. Then his pupil said, Bhante, create a cluster of lotuses in that pond. Then he creates them. And Bhante, please create one big lotus. Then that was created. And then, Bhante, please create a girl. about 16 years of age, a beautiful girl, singing and dancing on that lotus. Then he created that also. And then the people said, Pandey, just look at her. So as he looked at what he had created, lust arose in his mind. He was looking at his own creation, but it was a beautiful girl and singing and dancing, so lust arose in his mind. So at that moment, he knew that he was not an arahant. So he knelt down before his own pupil and said, "Oh, good man, please be my help." Then the pupil said, "Pandey, I came here just for this purpose." So the pupil taught him how to meditate, give him a meditation subject. And then the pupil wanted to give time to his teacher, and so he went away. As soon as he went away, the teacher became an arahant. So the mental defilements not destroyed along with the craving destroyed not along with the root, which is ignorance, can come up even after 60 years of non-arising. Must not confuse this Dhammadena, who was a monk, with a sister Dhammadena who lived during the time of the Buddha. So that was Dhammadena, the nun who lived during the time of the Buddha, and this was Dhammadena, the arahant, the male who lived maybe 600, 700 years after the Buddha. So please do not confuse these two. Although the name is the same, Dhammadena and Dhammadena. What is the burden? Five aggregates. What is the bearer of the burden? The person. What is the taking up of the burden? Craving. And what is the laying down of the burden? Cessation of craving. To achieve cessation of craving, what must we do? We must practice vipassana. So now we, all of us, are practicing vipassana here, and so we are laying down burden after burden during our practice of vipassana meditation. Momentary laying down, but this momentary laying down laying down will one day mature into the total laying down for good. So may we all be able to lay down the burden of five aggregates once and for all through the practice of vipassana meditation.